We wrap up the week with Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star, the beat writer for Indiana football and basketball and baseball and soccer and Olympics and everything else that's going on. The opening ceremonies a little bit earlier today. If you didn't have a chance to catch those, don't you worry. NBC will have them in prime time, and every other streaming service in America will have them on-demand video. So, yes, the Olympics get started. Colts training camp opened officially for practice yesterday, and the Big Ten media days. Not bad for nothing going on in the middle of summer, buddy. How are you?
Well, I think this is the point at which we're allowed to say summer's more or less over.
These are all summertime activities, though. We're right in the guts of it. Baseball season's going on. Trade deadline's next week. Reds sweep the Braves. I mean, we've got all these things happening. NFL Hall of Fame game is next Thursday. You're right. Summertime is getting closer, and let's see, 2 weeks from this weekend, we will have maroon and gold, purple and white, red and black scrimmages for high school football. Yeah, it's all getting very, very real. 3 days in Indianapolis, kicked off on Tuesday. We talked yesterday about Tony Petitti, the commissioner, and all the things happening with Big Ten championships and adding the four new conference teams and all the down-the-road planning and all the what's going to happen in college sports. Well, today we'll get into the Indiana Hoosiers. Yesterday on Thursday, Kurt Cignetti, a little behind schedule, though. That's all right. Met with the media, and, well, he was entertaining as ever, buddy, and you had some breakout sessions afterwards with the coach and three players as well. Well, you were right there in the middle of it. Let's get to, well, Mr. Cignetti, he's not his great quote to start the proceedings. Well, what's the key after 42 years being on the roster? Well, he's putting the roster together for Indiana football this year, and he was his very entertaining self yesterday.
Yeah, and it wasn't anything that if you are – you know, an IU fan, it wasn't anything that you haven't heard him say at some point or another here in the last, you know, 8 months or whatever it's been. I think it's been right around 8 months. But media day is always a little different because it's the first chance for the conference at large to meet a coach, even in this, you know, even in this environment of, you know, social media and everything kind of pulling closer and closer together, you still don't get the full effect because everybody's got to be worried, obviously, about what, you know, they are, what's in front of them, what they need to be focused on. And so, you know, it was undeniably, I think it was in a funny way. I think he was also better received because it was the third day and I think everyone was kind of tired. And, you know, like Jed Fish was up there sort of filibustering about not wanting to talk too much about whatever he was up there to talk about for Washington. And then Cignetti got up there and dropped a couple deadpans and, you know, took a playful jab at his AD. And suddenly everybody was like, well, okay, there's a little energy in the room again. Because these things can be an absolute sort of grind, just, you know, being people talking at one another for hours on end, day after day. And I think Cignetti maybe lightened some of that up. And I think, again, like I said, I think he was really well received by the conference in terms of, you know, particularly, I think his message of just saying, why would we not be trying to win now? What are we doing if not trying to win now? What would be the point in saying, oh, give us some time or next year or, you know, don't go too far? You know, he's saying, let's go now. There's no reason not to. And it makes an awful lot of sense if you have seen, or I would say maybe it makes the energy, the momentum, the excitement around the program make more sense to the conference at large is probably the way I was trying to put that, when, you know, you maybe spend a little time around Cignetti and you realize why IU fans are so, you know, eager for the season to start.
And the other part of this as well is, in his own words, he said, hey, guys, we have to remember this is entertainment as well. And he was entertaining. When there are no game films to watch and no drives to decipher and no situations of down and distance to break down, I don't want to say he's selling the hype or selling the entertainment, but did people expect him to walk out on the stage and say, wow, geez, what did I get myself into here? Oh my gosh, we'll be lucky to win a game.
I think the difference though is how often do coaches in his situation, and I know it's different with the portal. I understand that NIL, and he talked about those things, but how often do coaches, you know, come out and say, it's going to take time. We have to build our culture. You know, there's kind of this unspoken, hey, I got to get some of these guys off the roster and I got to replace them with my guys. And, you know, coaches are always playing for time. They're always asking for more time because more time is more job security. And, you know, Cignetti had some rather pointed comments about guys that were on the roster when he took the job that maybe he didn't want, that he wasn't particularly brokenhearted to see go into the portal. But at the same time, and I talked to Mike Kadick, one of Indiana's player representatives at Media Day, about this too, you know, there's never been a moment when Cignetti has said, oh, this, you know, you may need to give me some time, or, you know, I don't know, I'm not a miracle worker, or whatever. Because the thing is, and I talked to Kadick about this, on the one hand, when a coach is standing up there and saying, you know, I expect to win now, and if you can't be part of that, if I don't think you're going to be capable of contributing to that, then we may have to move on, then a player is going to look at that and say, wow, okay, you know, that might strike a little fear into your heart. But on the other hand, what Kadick pointed out is, when he's standing up there and saying we can win right now, what he's doing is expressing a certain amount of faith in players he's inheriting and players that he's asking to kind of stick with him. And I know, listen, I mean, Indiana's more than half of Indiana's roster is going to be new next year. So let's not act like there's been some remarkable continuity across these last few months. But there is, I think, still buy-in from the guys that Cignetti inherited that are still here, not just because of his record or because, you know, oh, we had a good spring or whatever, but because from kind of day one, he said, if you stick with me, if you do it the way I tell you to do it, we can win right away. I don't need to wait two years to have my guys in place. I'm not going to complain about not having enough staffing money. He's never complained about not having enough NIL resources, et cetera. He's always said, more or less, we have what we need to win in Bloomington. And the reason I took this job was because I've kind of done this before. I know what this challenge of taking a program that struggled and turning it around is, what it takes. I think I can do it here. There's no reason that we can't be successful, you know, fairly quickly here. And I think that, you know, the conference, listen, I don't mean to be flippant. I say that a lot when I talk about IU football. But the conference knows what IU football is. You know, everybody else at Conference Media Days knows what IU football is, what IU football is fighting, the history, whatever else. When the message is there's no reason why we should limit the way we are thinking about all this, then you're going to get pretty quick buy-in. And I think it's understandable why you've seen IU fans and, you know, at least as much as we can kind of gauge it to this point, IU players really embrace all this.
Zach Osterman, Indianapolis Star, joining us. Support local journalism, please. Buy a subscription, IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman on the X. And when we talk about the expectations and moving forward and what we're doing here in 42 years of making the roster, which I thought was brilliant to start with, well, there's two things that jump off the page. Number one, he does not suffer fools at all. And the lecture on about where he has been picked when he has not been picked highly in his conference preseason rankings in the past, again, giving history lessons, he doesn't know anything different. So where some people might think that's flippant, well, as he once said, Google him.
And again, he's quick. When he says these things, he's always quick to say, listen, I know we've got to prove it on the field. You know, he never sort of skirts around that. But in the same breath, it is understandable why a coach who has, to this point in his career, grappled with a number of different challenges and succeeded in all of them would look at this. And I thought it was interesting too. He said, you know, I know that you know, in our modern society, 3 years seems like a lifetime, but Indiana 3 years ago was one score away from playing for a Big Ten title. Now you're acting like Indiana can't win. And again, he says this all the time. We've got to go prove it on the field. But I think his points are valid in saying, A, I've done this before. B, it's not like Indiana has never been here before, or even in like the even in modern times. And C, quite literally, the challenge in front of me is one that I sought out. I mean, he said that multiple times too, and I think that's interesting that he said it now, maybe a half dozen times. I've heard him say it across the last few months. Him say, "I was interested in the IU job because it's a challenge that I think I can master because I've done it before." And when he talked about those two times that he was picked to finish second to last in the league, those are two very distinct situations. One was Elon, where you know, for people who don't know, that is a pretty sort of modest job at the FCS level. It's gotten better in part because of Cignetti's time there. But, you know, if people remember Pete Limbo, who was at Ball State, he had some success there when they were still in the Southern Conference. Then they moved into the CAA. You know, Cignetti got the record wrong, but I think they were 12-45 in the 6 years before he got there, or the 5 years before he got there. So the point is, like, either way, you know, a prolonged period of, you know, just lacking success. And he goes to Elon and immediately wins eight games. And I think he got knocked out of the FCS playoffs that year in a 1-point loss to, I want to say, one of the highest ranked teams in the field. I'll look at it while we're talking about that. Yeah, he played number 22 Furman. And I think he was, I think Furman was 15. Or he was one or the other. You
the
get
Paladins.
My point.
Look out, Paladins. Here they come.
Yeah, he loses that game by a point. And then the next year, Elon has a winning record again. And then he's off to James Madison. The second time he was picked to finish second to last in the conference, he's taking James Madison from an FCS playoff semifinal and 12 wins in 2021 to playing in the Sun Belt, and they're picked second to last in the Sun Belt, probably just because everyone assumed you're making the step up from FCS to FBS. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. He goes 6-2 in the conference and ties for first in his division. So it's, I think the point he's making there is not just, hey, I've been here before with teams where people didn't expect a lot. It's also, I've done it in two kind of distinct situations. One where a team really needed picked up and turned around. Another where I had a good team. I just kind of had to prove to people that we could step up that level and not be afraid of it, so to speak, not be overwhelmed by it. And again, he's done it multiple ways. He's done it multiple places. And he'll tell you, he said in his, I think it was in his podium remarks yesterday, he'll admit, this is, you know, I haven't done it on this scale before. I haven't done it at this level before. But the confidence he has is insane. But everywhere I've been so far, it's worked. And it's worked right away, and it's worked consistently. So there's no reason in his mind why it shouldn't be that way here.
And the other point, as you just accurately illustrated, this is the top of the food chain, and this will be the next test, probably the final test as well, where we have a bunch of new faces on the roster at skill positions and across each side of the ball. There's a brand new coaching staff as well, new to Indiana fans, Zach Osterman, but as Kurt Cignetti pointed out yesterday, not new to him. That continuity is also important, making all these changes.
No, it definitely is, and I think it's important when you consider how many players. I think the number might be 46 now, new players that are coming through in between like last season's roster and the roster projected for this season. I think it's 46 now. And when I say that, you know, when we talk about this, for all the optimism. You know, I was sitting there and listening to Jed Fish talk, and he was talking about we had a whole new staff and we're only returning two starters and we had to take 30-something, 40-something players. And I thought, man, that sounds like a big job, you know, in year one. And if you were, you know, completely neutral on Indiana, if you'd not spent any time around Kurt Cignetti before this week or whatever, you'd probably look at Kurt Cignetti talking about what he's talking about and say, oh, that seems like it's going to be pretty difficult for Kurt Cignetti. And so there's, you know, the part of the interesting piece of Indiana's schedule is there's a lot of teams on Indiana's schedule that are kind of like this. you know, Nebraska a little bit, obviously year two, Northwestern kind of the same thing, but a lot has changed there in a short space of time. Washington's the same way. Michigan State's the same way. You know, time will tell kind of where Ryan Walters gets Purdue to in year two. That's a bit of a tongue twister, forgive me. But part of the reason for optimism around, I think, Indiana and Indiana's schedule is that it feels like there's a lot of these teams out there that you know, are there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of like, well, it might take them a little while to get things together, et cetera. But that's true of Indiana, too. So when you hear him talk about staffing and how consistently a lot of these guys, Mike Shanahan's been with them for a long time. Brian Haynes has too. You know, I think Grant Cain for 6 or 7 years. You know, a lot of these coaches that have come with him have been with Cignetti, you know, some of them in multiple stops now, but for several years. I think that continuity is important because, you know, you're having to smooth over a lack of continuity on the field, and you're having to try and do it faster than some of your direct competitors, because the difference between, you know, Cignetti has brought up a ton, and he did again this week, all the close games that he felt like James Madison won in the last couple, I guess he didn't feel like it, they did win them, and all the close games Indiana's lost in the last couple of years, you know, he's talking like a coach who understands that the difference between 4-8 and 8-4 isn't always as big as people think it is, and Indiana's got to find a way to be that team that's just a little bit further ahead of the curve than enough of the teams on its schedule to get where it wants to go this season.
Zach Osterman from the Indy Star checking in after the conclusion of Big Ten Media Days. 18 teams, 3 days, 6 teams per day. Well, that's exhausting, and it's great. Well, Kirk Cignetti's going to get some rest here. You'll give me the schedule on when everybody arrives at camp, when we're going to start fall practice and all of that. But Coach Cignetti says he also hits the pillow pretty comfortably every night, knowing that Curtis Rourke will be on his roster. Now, he hasn't anointed him the starting quarterback yet, but he didn't talk about any other quarterbacks. I can connect those dots.
Right, and Rourke is the only one also that obviously gets a a nod with the first team offense in the spring game. And you know, listen, you don't pursue a player of Rourke's kind of pedigree, you know, just to say, "Oh, come in here and see if you can fight to win the job." Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be handed to him, but you're talking about a guy with over 6,500 passing yards, or in fact, I guess over 77,000 passing yards across the last 3 seasons. A guy who is, you know, at very least Rourke has done enough that you can justifiably say he has nothing left to prove at the MAC level. He has nothing left to prove where he's been. And so it's just about whether or not he can manage that step up. You don't bring a guy like that in, you know, just to open the competition. And you're right. You don't talk about him the way Indiana has, the way where I guess Kurt Cignetti, because it's not like we talk to assistants really, but the way Kurt Cignetti has, if you don't see Rourke as a potentially substantial piece of the, you know, sort of the puzzle offensively. What I do think is interesting, though, is, and I know fans don't want to talk about this all the time, you know, Cignetti has progressively seemed more pleased with Taven Jackson's performance and progress over the last, you know, I don't know, probably since maybe early spring ball. And he had some, you know, he still kind of dangled the carrot out there, but he had some more sort of praise for Jackson's progress this week when we talked to him about the quarterback situation. And I bring that up, you know, not just for long-term planning, but also because 2018 was the last time Indiana had a starting quarterback last the whole season without suffering a meaningful injury. And obviously that's not part of the plan. You know, you never go into a season saying, well, we'll start him. And then when he gets hurt, we'll pivot to this other guy. But Indiana, you know, fans will know well that you tend to need more than one because guys get banged up. Guys have bad luck. You know, guys take just like awkward shots or whatever. Rourke obviously tore his ACL a couple years ago. There's no reason to think that will recur other than just the fact that injuries sometimes happen. But it is just a reminder that as much as you want to place in Curtis Rourke's hands, and Indiana's right to, you know, again, you know, about 7,200 yards in the last 3 seasons, 47 touchdowns to just 16 interceptions. He has not thrown a meaningful quantity of passes in a season in his career and completed less than 63% of them, which is a very good number. And that was last year when he had to kind of flatten his curve a little bit because he was coming back from the ACL tear. So he really didn't have an off season. He just kind of had to dive in essentially. And he still completed 63.5 for about 2,200 yards and 11 touchdowns and led Ohio to a second straight bowl game. So Rourke's bona fides are proven. And again, you can't guarantee he's going to adjust at this level, but at very least, there's nothing left for him to prove anywhere but this level. But I think it's equally compelling when you kind of hear Taven Jackson's name come up the way that it did with Kurt Cignetti, because as Indiana fans know too well, there's times when you're going to need your backup just as much as your starter.
So an experienced coaching staff, strength and conditioning staff as well, an experienced quarterback coming in, a bunch of fresh and new faces. When does fall camp start? When does everybody report to Bloomington, Zach? We know first game is Saturday, August 31st, FIU 330 Big Ten Network. So I would suggest everybody's getting there either this weekend or next.
I know it's midweek next week is when they get started, which
will be
is
the 31st.
Typical. Like it's typically about a week after media days. So they'll start midweek next week. I think first day might be the 31st Wednesday. In fact, it is. And obviously you get, you know, that 4 week buildup phase, and then Indiana's on the run because, once it starts, it doesn't stop. And we have talked so much about, you know, this schedule and how it could set up for Indiana, but you need to make it work too. You know, you've got FIU, you've got Western Illinois. You're going to have one more game on tape than UCLA is, because UCLA is going to go play at Hawaii, and then they're going to come home and get the week off, as the NCAA sometimes does for those teams that make that long of a trip in week one. But the flip side is you've got two games to tune up when UCLA's only got one. UCLA's got a new head coach, some turnover, I think a little bit less turnover there because they hired from within. But if you can win that game and then you can win the Charlotte game, then suddenly you're playing the last game of September against Maryland at home 4-0 with the wind in your sails. And it's not hard to start talking yourself into the idea that this is one of those sorts of seasons. And, you know, listen, nothing's given, obviously, but ask any coach in any sport, particularly college sport, confidence is invaluable. Confidence is, you know, so important. And you get this Indiana team that clearly believes what its coach is saying, what its coach is selling, that it can turn things around quickly. You get this Indiana team to 4-0, to 5-0, with a really manageable October as well. Indiana doesn't play Michigan or Ohio State until November. It's not hard to see Indiana having the kind of season Cignetti is talking about. And, you know, where he sets that that bar, you know, he talked about 6-6 isn't good enough or whatever. Where he sets that bar is kind of his own standard or what he's going to demand of his team. But, you know, listen, if we sat here right now, and I offered you 7-5, but you beat Michigan State and Purdue, and you go to, I don't know, the Music City Bowl. Christmas in Nashville sounds real good to beat writers, trust me. I imagine it sounds pretty good to IU folks as well.
I think you'd snap your hand off for it right now, because we've seen injuries, we've seen unlucky, we've seen other things happen to this program, and to have it turn around when your program is known for just who's going to be the next coach, that you've got to break that streak at some point. And hopefully Kurt Cignetti is the man to do it. Indiana, FIU, August 31st, once camp starts. We will have audio and everything else from all the press conferences and get-togethers and all the great things that happened. And Zach Osterman from the Indy Star will continue to join us as, we start a brand-new chapter of Indiana University football. When we come back after Diane Daly's news headlines, we'll talk the Olympics. Zach caught up with Lily King. The opening ceremonies went on this afternoon. You can watch them tonight, over 3.5 hours of ceremony. And, well, a busy fortnight in Paris for the 2024 Olympics. We'll talk about the Summer Games and the Indiana contingency, and especially Lily King when we come back. The Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood. Happy Hour continues with Zach Osterman next. The Olympics 2024 finally gets started. Indianapolis had the swimming and diving, or had the swimming trials, not the diving trials. That was in Knoxville, Glass. The swimming trials, we've heard from Drew Johansson this week with Joe Smith. Indiana sending 20 Hoosiers with the Summer Olympics from multiple countries. But probably the most famous member of their contingent is Lily King, Zach Osterman. You had a chance to catch up with her. Now she's, quote-unquote, the elder statesman. With all of 28 years of age, we know it'll be her last Olympic competition. But the Hoosiers, Drew Johansson's a great example. Indiana's had a diver in the Olympics every session since 1964. A very proud, proud tradition here from Spitz to, well, we can go through them all, but we're not going to. Indiana always well represented, not always with the USA either, but across the world. And Lily King, well, she'll give it one more chance to fill up those record books.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because I remember writing a profile of Lily King in 2016, and you know, I knew who she was. She just had a good year at Indiana, but I think she was just a freshman then, and you know, she hadn't really become what she's become, which is, you know, sometimes the Olympics have these athletes that even among the absolute sort of excellent, you know, the absolute best in their sports, whatever they might be, some athletes just seem to sort of achieve things and capture the country's attention, the world's attention at a level that even their peers don't. And Lily was one of those, undeniably, in the Rio Olympics in 16. You know, she owns the 100 meter breaststroke record still for the Olympic record. There was the whole sort of rivalry with Yulia Efimova and then beating her. I think she got two golds, if I'm not mistaken, in those Olympics, because I think she was also part of that relay team that took gold. And so it's, you know, I mean, it's kind of easy to say when we're around here, but because she's local, but I mean, it's not just like, oh, Indiana had an Olympian. It's like Indiana had one of the most recognizable, successful, popular, and sort of, you know, culturally relevant Olympians of those games. Then obviously Tokyo happens and all that's just very weird. I don't know if anybody has any like abiding memories of the Tokyo games. They were just, I mean, they were very,
the only memory is they got completed. That's about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was very, very strange. And obviously she had a good games in Tokyo as well, two silvers and a bronze. But, you know, it's interesting when you – I can remember, like, the changing nature, and this is kind of, you know, a reporter being a little bit reflectively self-important. But I remember, like, covering Yogi Ferrell, you know, from his sophomore year in high school all the way through to his senior year in college, and how much – it felt like you could sort of chart the change in the person as much as the athlete. And talking to him, obviously talking to his late father, Kevin Sr., who was a wonderful man to have a conversation with. And, you know, it kind of struck me, obviously, Lily King, it's not quite the same dynamic. Number one, the Olympics only come every 4 years. Number two, obviously her collegiate career ended a little while ago. So she hasn't been, you know, quite as sort of ever present in the IU sphere these last couple, 3 years, whatever it's been. But in the same breath, it's sort of the same thing where you can remember, you know, when she was young and brash and confident and had every right to be because of the success that she had. But now I think that, you know, by her own admission, I think there's some perspective. I don't know if that's quite the right word, but you just think about things differently, and not in terms of, you know, legacy. I don't think she, you know, she, I forget the exact quote she gave me. She said, I guess we're having the legacy conversations now. You know, it, 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 it's not something where she's thinking about the end, because I don't think athletes can do that. I think athletes, especially at this level where it's like, you ultimately, yes, you have trials, you have world championships, but like the thing you're thinking about is every 4 years. The thing you're thinking about is so rare in the life of an athlete, the career, you know, sort of the career span of an athlete, that you just can't do anything except think about what's right in front of you. But I think that, you know, there was a quote that she gave that I think, you know, it is interesting to hear, or to almost kind of chart the difference in someone who's on their third Olympics as opposed to their first, as successful as she's been. And she said, "I'm at the point in my life where I've accomplished everything I ever wanted to in this sport. And I don't think very many people can say that. I'm very fortunate." And number one, most people can't, you know, most people don't get to walk away from their sport feeling like there's literally nothing else they could have done in terms of, you know, I don't know, winning World Series or making All-Star games or winning the Champions League final, team sports, individual sports, any of it. There's really nothing Lily King hasn't done. She's won gold medals. She's won silver medals. She's won gold medals at the World Championships. She's won gold medals at the Olympics. She still owns an Olympic record. I know I think she said she's a little nervous about that because there are a couple promising young swimmers coming into these trials that are coming into these games rather that have come close to her Olympic mark. But, you know, the point is, it is just kind of, it is very interesting to talk to someone who seems to have without being self-important, because she wasn't at all in these, you know, a couple different interviews, one like collective we did, and then one just kind of like one-on-one interview. She did not ever seem very self-important at all. But I think that, especially because she clearly has had at least some conversations with herself or her family or, you know, her inner circle about her career, because we know that she said these will be my last games. I'm not retiring immediately after the games, but I know I'm not doing another 4-year cycle. I'm not aiming for 2028. She seems to have, you know, found that sweet spot that athletes find as they get older, as they have more success, as they gain more perspective, in both being able to continue to embrace the challenge that's just right in front of their face, but also be able to see enough of the wider lens through enough of the wider lens to understand what they've accomplished and what it means. And I know these games mean a lot to her. You called her kind of the elder stateswoman. And I think she feels that way a little bit. I think she said, you know, like the Rio games, everything was new. Everything was so kind of, you know, out there, and it was almost kind of overwhelming in a way. And the Tokyo games are just weird. So these will be the first Olympics that, for her, I think, she, you know, by her own words, I think she said they'll feel kind of normal because they won't be new and they won't be strange. She'll be able to go in and just kind of know this is here and this is what this means. And hey, this is really special. Don't skip this. Don't take this for granted, whatever. I think she's looking forward to that as well. And, you know, I don't mean to get overly, I don't mean to get overly sort of like, I don't know what quite the word would be, like overly philosophical, but she said a lot of athletes don't get to achieve, you know, don't get to a point in their life where they can say they've accomplished everything they wanted to in their sport. I think that's true, but I also think a lot of athletes don't get to a point in their life where they're able to recognize that and they're able to appreciate it while they're still competing and while they're still able to challenge themselves and push themselves at the highest level. And I think that is something, you know, distinctly special to where Lily King is going into these games.
Did you get the feeling or the sense that this would free her up, knowing this, being at peace with it, where she can just literally focus on swimming and winning?
I don't know. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth.
But she really doesn't have anything else to worry about except who's next to her in the lane over and how fast to get to the other end, it seems like.
I think she's always been able to do that, and I think that's been a part of her success, is that, you know, there's never been like a moment when things were bigger, were too big, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, like, We talked to her and Blake Peroni, the other IU swimmers on Team USA, together. And somebody asked because obviously they know each other well. They, you know, they've trained together for a long time. They're teammates, et cetera. Somebody asked Blake Baroni, essentially, like, what after all these years, sort of watching each other's careers, stands out to you most about Lily King? And he said it's just her ability as a racer. And he didn't mean her strength as a swimmer, although obviously that kind of goes without saying when you consider all the things she's won. What he meant was her ability, just like, it doesn't matter what meet it is, doesn't matter what shape she's in, you know, it doesn't matter where she is in her training schedule, or if she's carrying an injury, or if, you know, this meet's not that big of a deal, but the next one's going to be a really big deal or whatever. She just wants to get in the pool and just race the person next to her. That's all that matters, you know, and she just wants to, beat whoever she's swimming against, wherever she's swimming against them, whenever she's swimming against them. And the ability to, again, this is one of those things where you think about what makes a good, like what makes good athletes. Sometimes it is the ability to not get lost in, you know, the bigger picture, to not be overwhelmed or even distracted by, you know, kind of what is going on, what is, you know, whether it's this, you know, sort of made for TV rivalry she had in Rio, whether it's the strangeness of the COVID games in Tokyo, whether it's the fact that she's going into these Paris games knowing, hey, you know, win, lose, or draw, this is my last go round. It's just the ability to just always attack just literally what's next. And I asked her about, and I'm just kind of combing through the story for my quotes now, or her quotes that I had in the story, I should say. But, you know, I asked her about the way Blake Baroni kind of described her, you know, just more than anything, just a racer. It doesn't matter how she feels or what the times are. And she just said, I'm always just trying to be the best version of myself that day. The legacy stuff is awesome, but I still feel like I have a lot more to do and see and experience. So, I mean, there's probably some element of that. Like, I think we've all played a sport at a level where we were able to say, hey, I know this is my last go round, so I can just kind of cut loose. There's no concern about, you know, I don't know, injury or stress or whatever. I'm just going to leave it all out there and be proud of, you know, how I finish, when I finish, where I finish. But my sense, without wanting to put words in her mouth or psychoanalyze Lily King too much, is that it won't make a tremendous impact in either direction, because I think she's just one of those athletes that is really, really capable of attacking what's right in front of her and not worrying until it's time about the bigger picture.
Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star giving you a little swimming preview with Lily King. You can read all about it, IndyStar.com. Lily King, the 100-meter breaststroke preliminaries, July 28th. That's a Sunday, 5 a.m., kids. That is Eastern time, according to IUHoosiers.com. The 200-meter breaststroke preliminaries will be July 31st, next Wednesday, and the 4x100 medley prelims will start August 3rd, a week from Saturday. You can go to IUHoosiers.com and see all of the Indiana-affiliated athletes and their schedules. Good job from Sports Information to put all that out and make it easier to track for all of us. So that will be fantastic. Great job in Indianapolis this week, buddy. It was a pleasure following along. And football season, the Olympics, Colts training camp. I know you were excited to see your buddy with the Falcons throwing some – Kirk Cousins throwing some footballs down there in Georgia as well. When I talk to you next week on the airwaves, it will be the first day of August, and there will be an NFL game that evening. The Bears and Texans will play in the NFL Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. We'll have the Major League Baseball trade deadline in the near rear view. And then, August 7th, our kids all go back to school, which is fun. So we've got a ton of stuff going on. Thanks for making heads and tails of all of it. Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you next month, which is next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always, Glass.
That's my man, Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. As we always beg you, please, please, please support local journalism. Buy a subscription today. Dustin Dupirak was on earlier this week talking the Pacers, Summer League, and off-season moves. You can head to WGCLradio.com to get caught up on all of that. Don't go anywhere. The Infinity Sports Network JR Sports Brief coming up, and then we'll have Reds on the Radio. Tommy Thrall's pregame at 6:20. First pitch tonight in Tampa at 6:50. We'll be back with you on Monday. Have a great weekend. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour is over.